Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Sorry, I'm giggling. Lana has a cold today.
That was one
of it's not funny, but your voice is very cute.
It was one of the best renditions of our theme song we've ever done. Yes,
in case you didn't know, she sings this live every time at the beginning of the show.
So there you have it. There you have it. My name's Landon Octagon.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here around our kitchen table. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, and we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes, our friend Marcus. The Donna Lana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For information, go to www.themuckyduckpub.com or call Marcus or drop into the pub.
Very good. We thank them for our support, and we thank you for our for supporting us, too. This is Community Radio, and we get by with your help, too, so consider becoming a member. Consider giving a little bit of your time and talents to this fine organization. Community Radio really is for everybody.
Yeah, we have a very diverse lineup of all kinds of music and shows and opinions, and I think it's very inclusive aims, as it were.
They even let us on the air. Donna, I think we're doing good.
Yes, yeah, we are. They haven't put the kibosh on us yet.
So here we go.
5 years, Alana.
Here we go.
Okay.
Today on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we're going to talk about some tastes of spring. Wild herbs, watercress, all that good stuff that's coming up. And we'll take a trip to our radio archives and hear a visit with Marlene Ayersman from 2015. It's from an old Earth Day interview. She knows about wild animals, and she talks about the Iowa Wildlife Center, snakes, bats, coyotes, swans, and why she enjoys her job. Spring weather, almost green. Well, it is green.
Yeah, it's that lacy green in the trees that it's actually, for a moment, my favorite time of year. You know, it's so fleeting.
Fleeting, it is. We had, just to keep us humble, however, Central Iowa did have a bit of a frost last week.
It's true, but I'm hoping that it didn't affect the fruit tree blossoms.
I don't think so. I've been checking. At least here around Central Iowa, I was way, way too optimistic, and I did put out some annual flowers. We need some coleus here. They all got just wiped out.
But. Oh, well, I was running around putting bath towels all over the planters in my yard on Saturday night.
It's
a
little nippy out there.
But that happens.
Both Donna and I look forward to the first wild green things in our garden. Talk about motherwort, Donna.
Well, mother, it's one of the first things up. It's been up for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. The little tiny, they're, I don't know how to describe them. They're very pretty. They come up in clumps.
It's kind of like maple leaves, very pointy little maple leaves.
Really pretty.
Multi-pointed little poofy leaves.
Yeah, and they go on later in the season. They grow these tall, spiky things, and they completely morph. But right now, they're very tender and very delicious. And, we're doing this show kind of, I just want to encourage everybody to go out and pick one thing. Unless you have a yard that's heavily sprayed, so that means you may not have anything out there except grass. And you may not want to be eating it if it's quite pesticide-laden. However, I don't use any of those things, so, of course, I have no grass and lots of Creeping Charlie. But I do have, I have motherwort, I have dandelions, and what's that new thing you were describing? Because I have that in my yard, too.
Oh, I just found out this year that you can eat Virginia waterleaf. That is
another pretty little thing.
A pretty little spotty thing. And it is rampant here in Central Iowa, usually on the forest floor, but it sneaks into
gardens. It in amongst my Creeping Charlie.
Yeah, it just kind of works it. And again, you eat it. I've been using it as a cook green. I didn't care
for it. You can put all of these in salads. And
yeah.
Okay, yesterday I was out at Peterson's Pits. The violets are up everywhere. Lana says you can eat the leaves, right?
You can eat the
little leaves.
Eat the leaves of the violet.
The flowers.
Eat the young leaves, not after they've sat there for a month, but they're a little tough, but they're great in a salad. And the flowers are very edible, too.
And then, of course, the classic is dandelions, which are a nice bitter. It's like this spring tonic thing, you know?
It is.
It can be as simple as you go out and you pick the motherwort leaves and you pour hot water over them in a teacup, let them steep. Or I've just been going around. I kind of like the flavor. Mm-hmm. Just you pick it raw and suck on it or chew it up for a little while. It's kind of like welcoming the living earth back into your body or something
it
like
is.
That.
And
just
because,
get out there and pick something.
And because this plant, it's motherwort, W-O-R-T on the end of mother. That term wort is an old term that I think it means medicinal herb because there's St. John's wort, there's mugwort, there's other worts out
there.
Well,
and motherwort is known to be, as you would guess, very motherly. It's calming, it's soothing, it's probably good for your nerves. And then, of course, dandelion greens, the bitters are really good digestive tonics. We've also got ramps and nettles right now, too.
Oh, let's talk about more of that later. But again, we dove into the archives. And on a past Donalana Kitchen, we talked to author Ava Chin about her adventures in foraging for wild foods. She's an author, and she wrote a book called, what, Eating Wildly, I believe?
Something like that.
She forages for wild food in all places, New York Central Park, and she eats quite well there. So we talked about motherwort with Ava Chin.
Welcome to Ames, Ava.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
We wanted to start out saying that Lana was just in my backyard the other day, and I had just finished reading your book, which has a lot about motherwort.
Mm.
Just the name. We love the name motherwort, but I didn't realize that. We were looking at my plants, and Lana goes, "You've got a lot of motherwort here." And I said, "Is that what I've been pulling out for the last 5 years?" And it keeps coming back everywhere. So now I've been drinking motherwort tea madly. Thank you very much. Tell us about motherwort.
Sure, absolutely. So I've written about it for the book.
Quite
I can
a
read
bit.
A little section from it if
and
you
I
like.
And I have to say they're really pretty, too.
It's very pretty. It's a very distinct colored leaf. It's almost slightly fuzzy.
Yeah, and kind of ruffly, and it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's a member of the mint family. It's got a square-shaped stem, and it's one of my favorite plants. When you first taste it, it can be extremely bitter. Right? But it's known as being a nervine, so it's like kind of calms your nerves.
Oh, just what we need.
That's right. That's right. So if you know you're kind of a high-strung type A personality, maybe you need a little bit of motherwort in your life.
Or if you're an overly tired mother or grandmother.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So this is a section. I first discovered motherwort growing in the wild in Boulder, Colorado. I had gone on a foraging walk with their esteemed forager, Bridget Mars.
Ah.
And I was so thrilled to actually see it in the wild. I'll just read a couple of paragraphs. "The leaves were shaped like a lion's tail, and I thought about the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz combing the end of his tail between his paws. I rubbed a leaf between my fingers. The motherwort was less fuzzy than the common mallow and smelled like my grandfather's desk drawer, a repository for curios and odd mementos, pressed handkerchiefs embroidered with someone else's initials, buffalo nickels, an old extracted tooth. I'd first learned of Leonoris cardiaca from a Chinese doctor in Brooklyn who recommended it for women's issues like hormonal imbalances and spot bleeding. In Old English, wort means plant, and I love the idea of a mothering plant that could aid my feminine issues and calm my nerves. According to David Hoffman's The Herbal Handbook, motherwort was used for menstrual conditions, as a relaxant during menopause, and as a tonic for the heart. Back then, I tried the herb in pill form and found it extremely dry and bitter. I had to drink an entire glass of water in order to get it down. Because of the taste, I had never taken it on a regular basis, and so couldn't confirm whether or not it worked. But here it was, alive and thriving in the middle of downtown Boulder. And apparently in your yard.
Yes, lots of it. Is it something I can dry also for?
Yes, but how I like to take it is to dry it first and then make a tincture out of it. So you kind of...
Alcohol, glycerin?
Alcohol.
Uh-huh.
A combination of like your highest proof alcohol you can get your hands on. For me, that's just a...
We have plenty of white lightning here in Iowa.
You can use that and a little bit of water. Mm-hmm. And you shake it. Shake it every day for about a month, and then you'll get a tincture. And it's a lot easier to my palate than to drink it as a tea because it is so bitter. So there's something nice about taking a shot of it.
It's not tasting bitter yet. Do you suppose it's because it's so young and fresh?
I don't know. I've had it pretty young. I found it pretty bitter. That maybe you're just, you enjoy it so much.
I do. We've been pushing the bitters because that's the underdeveloped flavor of the American palate.
Right.
And also it's very helpful in aiding digestion.
That was Ava Chin talking with Donna about motherwort.
And bitters, my favorite thing.
Yeah, one of those good plants that come up. It is a pretty plant, and it can be kind of, well, on my garden it's a little invasive, but it's easy to pull up. There's another plant called mugwort. Mugwort, same family.
And wort, that's, yeah.
Wort. It's more ornamental as far as I'm concerned. And it grows really tall, and it's a pretty, pretty plant. All of those nice, nice plants that we can enjoy, and they're all coming up.
Do you
this
have mugwort in your garden?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Oh, good.
It's great. Actually, it gets kind of woody toward the end of the season.
I've tried a few, and after a year or two, they punk out.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at this.
You've got a shady yard. Maybe they need
sun.
Yes, I do. Chives. Let's talk chives.
Right. The garlic chives. They come up at the same time as the motherwort, and I have lots of them.
Yes. Actually, the regular chives, and I have garlic chives, they're all up and running. Common chives.
Cultivated chives, right? The round ones.
Round tubes. And
what I have.
Yeah.
Are they just wild around here? How did I have them everywhere in the yard.
Well, they self-seed like crazy.
Okay.
Okay. That's probably how you got them everywhere.
And they're flat.
Yeah. Flat leaves with a little rounded tip, not the point.
Yes. Yes. And they're quite delicious. Like, I have so many of them. Unlike if you're, if you start a pile of chives, it takes a long time to get lots of them. So, like, my favorite thing, and actually I might do it tonight, you just boil up some pasta, put a little butter or olive oil in, and put lots of chopped garlic chives on it. It's delicious.
Yeah, especially this time of year. It's good. Now, the garlic chives.
Lots.
Yeah, lots. The garlic chives produce a white blossom. Kind of late in the summer.
Right. They're good in salads,
too.
Oh,
yeah. They're wonderful. And the common chives, more oniony chives, produce that very famous purple, round, fuzzy
That's
blossom.
Right.
That happens a little earlier.
Right. The only thing you need to know is that the stem that the flowers are on is woody. So you don't want the stem of that part. You want all of the little other spiky bits of garlic or chives, whatever kind of chive it is, and the flower top.
Very good. It's one of those joys. I talk about going out and eating something this time of year. That's a good thing to eat. Oh, I have experimented. I went out and I have a whole bunch of chives, and I took my scissors out there and just chopped off handfuls of both the common chives and garlic chives. And I thought, well, I can do this. I put them in my food dryer.
Huh? Oh, and yes, you're very good at the.
Well, because you don't just want them to to dry on the counter. Okay. The
did you chop
oils,
them and put them in the food dryer? Or you put them whole and then chop them?
I put them whole, but I cut them like in 4-inch chunks so mm-hmm. I could bend them around my circle of the food dryer is a circle.
Oh, yeah, right.
I just chopped them so they'd fit a little better. Mm-hmm. And I have a kind of a lot of people have these. It's called a Nesco food dryer, a little electric food dryer. Mm-hmm. And I really can't tell you the temperature because my thermometer on there is broken.
It's warm. Yeah.
Turn it on for a while. About, 4 hours, 5 hours. There's not a lot of water in it.
Till they get dry.
And then I put them in a small Cuisinart that I chopped things up with and ended up with chive powder.
I'm smelling them. Oh, it's so vibrant.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah.
And if you do that quickly or get it from the garden to the dryer to the grind up and into a jar stage.
Oh, look at this, Lana. So she's got it in a powdery form, but I'm also like rubbing it between my fingers and then it gets even more powdery. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. So this is what a lot of these high-end chefs do.
Ooh.
They use this and it's called... They would describe it as chive dust.
Oh, my goodness.
And they would use it on top of as a final finishing agent. And it is packed with flavor. Because, you know, when you crush it and put it immediately on the food, then you're releasing what's left of the volatile oils. And yum.
A handy thing.
Yum.
I'm going to, that is a good thing. I have a note of caution. As I was, wheeling around, I put the dried, unchopped chives into the Cuisinart to zap them a few times. And then after I'd got done turning it into dust, I opened the top of the Cuisinart, stuck my nose in there.
And it all landed on your face, right?
And I inhaled, and it's a bit much. So word of caution. Practice safe kitchen habits out there. You don't want a nose full of chive dust.
Chive dust.
It'll really set you free. Another spring sort of thing. It's a spring tonic.
Did you add any salt to this
No,
at all?
I didn't.
So this is straight. Okay.
I suppose you could put salt in.
Yeah, but why bother? You can put the salt on the food and keep it unadulterated because the salt will, in storage, probably attract moisture. Don't you think?
I would think so.
Yeah. We're guessing on this, but, we do have a little experience between the two of us.
What a
good idea.
This little good, small jelly jar.
Very clever of you, Lana. Yeah.
And the chives will come back. I'll probably do that again. Another thing that we can celebrate with spring. Oh, our friend Ben went up to Northeastern Iowa, and up there.
And all the running streams, yes.
They have watercress, and he brought me back a bag.
Clean watercress.
I haven't had watercress in ages. Talk about watercress, Donna. I gave Donna some, too.
Well, yeah, she gave me a bag full of it, and it is delicious. First of all, I stuffed hands full in my mouth, and then I put it in salads, and then I put it in sandwiches.
Yeah, again, to celebrate your love of bitters, because for those that like arugula, it's in that family of
It has a little heat to it.
Radishy.
It's lively.
Yeah, very.
Lively on the tongue. And it's just... So I looked it up, and everybody on the internet raves about it's full of vitamin K, it's full of this, it's full of that, it's so good for you, wah, 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 your spring tonic. So then I did look up, I found one YouTube cooking demo by Gordon Ramsay, the English gent, but I think he had a good idea. So watercress soup is a very classical, probably English kind of lovely thing, but his was particularly good because he did not overcook it till it turned grayish. He kept it really bright green. So all he did, now typically you can use chicken stock, or I think he just used water. And you should Google Gordon Ramsay if you want to do this. It's simple and clever, but he used a mandolin and made very thinly sliced potato. I mean, really thin, like mm-hmm. potato chip thin.
Mandolin, the kitchen.
The kitchen, right, the kitchen slicer thing. and cooked the watercress and in a little water with the thin slices of potato. Now, if you don't want to do that, the quick and dirty way would be to steam it's not that much potato. The potato is just the binder to give it a little more. But you could pre-cook the potato and then steam the watercress with the cooked potato. Then he pureed the whole thing with just salt, pepper, and a couple of dabs of butter and ended up with this beautiful, bright green puree. And then he served it. This was the fun part. He served it with a poached egg. And he did this technique. I am going to try it. It looks so fun. So you break the egg into any kind of little container so that you can plop it in the water. And you get the water boiling and you swirl it. So you got a little vortex, and then you drop the egg into the middle of the swirl. And what happens is the whites cook and fold around the yolk. So you actually end up with a little pouch of the white makes an envelope for the yolk. And you only cook it long enough so that the yolk is still kind of runny or wet. And then you, of course, have to lift it out with a slotted spoon, put it into some cold water quickly to stop the cooking. So then he plated it by putting that beautifully poached little egg in a kind of a shallow bowl and pouring this vibrant green thick puree around it. And then I think he salt and peppered the egg in the bowl. And then he plopped one watercress leaf on the top of the poached egg. So you have this white thing in the sea of green. And it looked easy enough to do at home, but it was a very impressive presentation.
Oh, I think the taste of watercress would be really good with eggs.
With just a little butter and the yolk of the egg to make it rich and kind of unctuous. Neat trick. Sometimes those chefy guys know what they're doing. So this was Gordon Ramsay.
Watercress soup. Oh, I want to mention watercress is not a central Iowa sort of native thing. And we get back to our resources here. Watercress requires cold, very unpolluted, very clean water.
Moving water.
Yes, moving water. And we can't have like your agricultural runoffs
right.
in it.
No, especially like E. coli from animal things and, you know, that is be careful where you're sourcing it if you're picking it wild.
It generally grows north of here, Minnesota, Wisconsin.
But you can grow other cresses in the garden, which also make great – same thing. It's got that peppery flavor. You can make watercress soup out of – what are they called? Curly cress is one.
Curly cress and garden cress.
Are you growing any this year?
I will. It's very much like parsley. It looks like parsley coming up. Now, that grows in the garden, in the soil. Watercress really does need moving water.
Yeah.
The roots are like
the
kind
real
of
watercress,
out there,
yeah.
And it makes a mat on the pretty, pretty water. It's really nice.
I have to say, in general, I'm not a fan of hydroponics. I find, like, hydroponic lettuce, let's say that it lacks – well, it would make sense. It's grown in water, so it's going to have more water in its cellular matter. So it's not the same. But watercress is one of the few things that is meant to grow that way.
It thrives. It thrives in water. Watercress, yes. And a moving strip – oh, it's good. Radishy. Yes, it is.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
Yeah, think of, I like that watercress. I never have had watercress soup. I like it in sandwiches.
It's a wonderful thing to stuff in roll-ups and on sandwiches and in salads. And we've been having a watercress week.
Very good.
Thank you, Lana, and thank you to Ben for picking the watercress for us.
Spring things. This is KHOI, and this is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Thank you. was a fine ragtime tune called The Tomahawk, an original piano piece by Reginald R. Robinson. And we'll hear more from him later. Earth Day, Arbor Day, they were both last week, but really, every day should be Earth Day and Arbor Day, since we're finding out more about climate change and our effect on the planet. Let's consider wild animals. They live here, too. We talked to Marlene Ayersman, the director of the Iowa Wildlife Center. It's a good thing to open our eyes and our minds to what's all around us. In the studio with us today is Marlene Ayersman. She's the co-founder and director of the Iowa Wildlife Center. Welcome, Marlene.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So tell me a little about the Iowa.
Tell us about your wildlife.
Yeah, wildlife, yeah.
Wildlife is fun. Let me tell you, you guys have fun with plants and growing. You have fun with cooking. I have fun with the wild animals. So, yeah, and they can be, for us, they can be just any species that comes in the door. Iowa Wildlife Center was formed about in 2010. We incorporated, and our mission is to provide wildlife rehabilitation services for Central Iowa and conservation education programming and teaching people about giving wildlife assistance, so providing them with some skills to help wildlife themselves.
Sounds like a skill that needs to be done. Where is the Wildlife Center?
Well, we're building our center out on 75 acres of land near the Ledges State Park in Boone County, and we lovingly call that land Wildway. The wildlife that come to us are injured or orphaned or sick, and so they need special care. And each individual species has different caging requirements, different diet, and needs different handling techniques. So it's pretty amazing to be involved in this and try and learn. You learn something new every day, too.
So if someone should find, like, an injured hawk or something like that, what do they do?
Good question. For starters, they don't want to hurt themselves. So animals, wild animals, well, any domestic animal, they all have a way to defend themselves. And so you have to know what the business end is of these wild animals. And so for raptors, for the birds of prey, like a hawk, that would be the talons. The feet are incredibly strong, and those talons are incredibly sharp. That's what they catch their prey with. Mm-hmm. Their beaks are also sharp, and they have a good bite and can do some significant damage. But those talons, those feet are what you need to look out for. So if people aren't comfortable catching it, I always say wear gloves for sure to protect yourself from any kind of possible disease or parasites or anything that the wild animals might have with them. or leather gloves to protect themselves from talons. A blanket thrown over an animal can help because it gives them that sense of security a little bit. It sort of puts them in the dark and enables you to grapple with them. So there's a way to do it. And so if people don't feel comfortable, I certainly tell kids not to ever try it themselves, to always find an adult, but they can always call us and we can talk them through it or possibly find a volunteer that has been trained and has the skills to help rescue an animal.
And this applies to things that have fur instead of feathers, too. I suppose that, well, good heavens, there's fox, there's coyote, mm-hmm, here, mm-hmm, deer, mm-hmm, squirrels, and also, and they all have sharp bits. And especially when an animal is hurt, they're going to be a little anxious.
Yes, and the other part of that, even if they're not hurt, is that they're afraid. I mean, you know, we are predators to them. And so that's an important thing to remember, too. And what to put the animal in is important. For example, for birds that fly into our windows, I tell people that often they just need time to recover, so to put them in a paper bag, fold down the paper bag. Never open the paper bag in your house because birds escape up, and then you'll be faced with trying to catch a bird flying around your house. So you take it outside and you open it up. But woodpeckers, if a woodpecker flies into your window, woodpeckers can beat them, you know, can get themselves out of a paper bag lickety-split.
Oh, I never thought of that.
You learn the hard way sometimes, Lana. You learn the hard way. So cardboard boxes make great containers for a lot of species. Dog crates make really good containers. So there are different things that you can use. You can use yogurt containers for things as small as bats. So, Yeah, it's all different, and we can help with that.
A part of this is getting to realize that we share the planet with other things. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily have to be overly afraid of animals. After all, they have as much right to be here as anything else. Mm-hmm. So if we can help them by getting them out of our house, for instance, mm-hmm. that might be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How did you get interested in working with animals? What was your background? What was your story on getting here?
I think I have to honor my folks with this because my dad took me fishing and hunting when I was a child, and my mom, although she didn't hunt, certainly she would go and sit in the car and wait. And my mom gave me the passion for the tender heart, I think, and my dad gave me the nuts and bolts of living with wildlife mm-hmm. and not being afraid of things. I remember we went out to the Isaac Walton here. Outside of Ames. I was born and raised here in Ames, and so was my dad. So Isaac Walton was important to our family when I was young, and we were out there walking in the woods, which seemed like a wilderness to me, and all of a sudden I looked down and my shoes were crawling with snakes. And I had evidently, I don't remember the time of the year, so I don't know whether this was a ball of mating garter snakes or if it was young that had just hatched. I don't have any recollection of that, but there I was faced. And my dad just said, "Marlene, stop. Just stand still. They're not going to hurt you."
Oh.
And told me what they were. And so then we just watched them for a while. And they didn't, they soon moved off my shoes. But now if my mother would have been there, she would have had me climbing a tree quickly. So there's they gave me very different things. Then I went on to do a lot of volunteer work and went back to school and got my degree in fisheries and wildlife biology and environmental studies. So
talk about what is wild in Iowa? We think of wild as out there, and we here sitting on chairs in a heated building, we are not wild. But I sort of beg to differ sometimes. What exactly – define wild, Marlene.
I think we can certainly be part of the wild, and because if we're going to be successful at preserving our Earth in any kind of sustainable way, I think we have to realize we are part of and not apart from the wild. So the wild can be in your backyard. You can sit and look at a square meter in your backyard and find wildness, I think. You can find – there are a lot of different species of ants. There are a lot of different species of bees and insects. And our yard is pretty wild. We don't really have much bluegrass. So we have a variety of plants growing up in our yard.
Well, I find, especially as the weather's changing and we're getting out a little bit more, because I always go and walk my dogs is my excuse. But being in the wild, in a poetic sense, I think helps us maintain the wildness within us,
mm-hmm.
the speciesness of being human, maybe so we're not so in our heads all the time. Or
We do live and breathe. We're part of this. And Native American tribes talk about having a totem or an animal that you are close to. And if we all think really hard, I think everybody has something mm-hmm. that, all right, if you could be an animal, what would you be? Or if you could be a weed, mm-hmm. what would you be?
So you must have some interesting stories to tell about animals that you've rehabilitated or dealt with.
Sure. I have many stories, and we could go on for a long time. I think that some of my favorite animals to take in are bats. All of our bat species here in Iowa are insectivorous, so they're out nibbling on all of those myriad of insects, from beetles down to mosquitoes. So they all have personalities when they come in the door, so they're all fascinating to me. And then I think one other thing that's really stayed with me, well, the first animal that I ever held in my hand was a robin. And I was a little girl, and I took it to the door, and it was back when they were spraying DDT. And my mother didn't – back then they were saying it was safe for everybody and everything. And so my mother didn't connect that bird was probably suffering from the effects of DDT, and she just thought it was – had some sickness that it was going to give me, and she told me to put it down. But that has stuck with me all my life, and just understanding that sometimes we don't know, but sometimes these animals who can't speak to us really need our help. So most recently was a coyote pup that I raised a couple of years ago. And that was...
How did you find it?
We had been called by the plant introduction station out here by Highway 30. They had three coyote pups running around, and they had mange. And they weren't doing well. They looked like they were starving. And so we figured out that they were indeed orphans. One parent had been seen killed on Highway 30, and we don't know what happened to the other adult. And we don't know what happened to the other pups either. They probably succumbed to the mange. Mange is caused by a mite, and it causes skin irritation and, over time, infection. And then the infection goes systemic through the body and starts shutting down their organs. So we were able, of the three remaining pups, to actually save one of them. And we kept that pup wild, and she became a beautiful, beautiful animal that we released out on Wildway.
How did you keep her wild?
We didn't coddle her. We didn't try and turn her into a dog. We didn't, you know, we kept the visual element. We kept tarps up around her pen so she wouldn't see humans all the time. We kept
the
noise down.
So you put her in like a dog run or something?
Yeah, we put her in something like that, right, mm-hmm. a big kennel. Yeah, mm-hmm. And with different caves for her, different dens for her to go in. We put in logs and potted trees for her to shred and play with and keep her active and healthy and happy.
And how long did you keep her?
We had her for, I think, 2.5 months, I believe.
And what did you feed her?
Well, we started out feeding her with some soft puppy food and some infusions that a veterinarian gave me to add to it. She's really interested in homeopathic medicines for animals. And then from there, we gave her dead mice. And then I gave her live mice. I put in a big stock tank and put live mice in there, and so she could prove to us that she was capable of knowing what her prey was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we knew that she was going to be a great predator of some of those garden pests you all talk about.
Mm-hmm. Ah,
very good.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. How long does it take for her to go from the puppy that you found to release? How long? What amount of time?
Just a couple of months.
Oh, a couple of months.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. Things grow a lot faster than we do.
They do grow quickly. Yeah.
So
yep.
you
have to.
Let her out when she was quite young then?
We let her out when she was ready. She, you know, they can survive on their own when they're, let's see, certainly when they're 4 months of age.
Oh, goodness, goodness. You're listening to KHOI FM 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about animals.
Coyotes.
We're back. We're talking to Marlene Ayersman. So.
Oh, I wanted to finish the coyote story. So when you let the coyote loose, what happened?
Oh, it was really interesting. You'd mentioned that coyotes are a pack animal, and yes, they are. We realized she was probably going to be okay. We had her large pen constructed out at Wildway, and we're going out there to feed her and preparing her for release. And my husband walked out there one morning and noticed a coyote on the outside of the pen. And so he stopped and watched for a minute, and it was a wild coyote touching noses with our coyote through the wire. And so my husband knew it was a male because at that point the wild coyote turned and saw him and trotted off, but not too fast because it stopped and marked its territory on the way.
Oh, so yes, I've seen them do that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. They squat and pee.
Well, for the males, they'll lift their leg and,
Dog leg.
So she bolted. We opened the cage door one fine morning, and she vanished into the tall grass without looking back. So that was, you know, to talk about tears of joy. That was a really, that was very cool.
So how many animals at one time do you have at the Wild Way?
Well, since we're in the process of doing so many things to develop this, we network a lot of animals away to other rehabilitators.
Maybe the better question is how many animals are you caring for in many different locations or have interest in? How many people call
in
when they
have
it?
Do you keep them
in your
kitchen cupboards?
Oh.
I can imagine taking them home sometimes.
Oh. That's a long story about bats in the refrigerator. But I had a second refrigerator a long time ago and that we didn't use for ourselves. And so I would hibernate bats in them in that refrigerator during the wintertime and then release them in the summer.
You are a very resourceful woman,
Well,
Miley.
Rehabilitators have to be resourceful because no one pays us for what we do.
Do they hang or do you put them in little boxes?
They do. They don't hang from the grates of the shelving unit. No, you put them in individual containers and they hang by the, you know, you put cloth in there so they can hang on it. So.
I'm thinking Tupperware. Bat Tupperware.
Works.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
See, I'm visualizing it with this twig stuck through it or something.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. No, not that. Not that elaborate even. So,
nice.
Yeah.
You mentioned mange before. I've seen animals that just plain don't look right. And mange is not just the coyote thing, right? It can be on other animals. This must have been a good year for squirrels. We had lovely, big, fat squirrels looking in my window saying thank you. And we had one that was just not doing well. It was like losing all its fur, and it was kind of like half the size. And actually, we put it down because I was thinking that it could have infected the other ones.
Right, and as I said before, it's mange is caused by a parasite, an external parasite. It's a mange mite, and they're species specific. So the coyote had its own kind of mange mite living
mange.
On it, and then the squirrel would have a different mite living on us. And I will caution people if they do come upon or put down an animal that has mange. When an animal dies, the mites sense that and they then crawl to some other living thing. So in fact, I ended up with mites from one of the coyote pups when it died.
Ah.
I took it out of the kennel and unbeknownst to me, the mites found me.
Oh, like ticks?
Yes. And it was not fun.
Itchy?
It's extremely itchy, yes. But because I'm not
a coyote,
they went through a cycle and then they all just died. I was not the right ecosystem for them. My body was not right. So you just had to live through that cycle.
Yeah.
And I did get some medication from the dermatologist to help.
So how did you treat the coyote that had mange?
We gave it some internal, you know, it's like parasite medicine, like you give Frontline and things like that to your dogs and cats. So you just treat it for the right parasite. Yeah.
Okay. And then nourish it and build it back up.
Yep, and the coat came in beautifully.
Oh,
well,
beautifully.
No wonder she had a boyfriend already.
That's right. She looked pretty chic, let me tell you.
Oh, good for you. I saw just yesterday on 13th Street flying over the swimming pool. It's not called a swimming pool. It's an aquatic center
yes.
complex swimming place in Ames. Three trumpeter swans. And I was just absolutely thrilled to see something actually so large.
Were they low down?
They were low down. They were kind of treetop level and heading straight south. I don't know where they were going, but it was very important.
Yeah, and they're you know, that reintroduction of trumpeter swans has, you know, been such a success here in Iowa. And so it's now people are starting to report seeing them. And that, you know, you think about how we extirpated so many species and now they're coming back. And that's the hope that we have, is that we can, for all of the problems that we have on this earth, that we are actually doing some really good things. So
we can learn to do the right thing.
Yep, we can.
Good.
So let's get a little optimistic here. Besides trumpeter swans, what are we growing back in Iowa?
Well, people have been reporting sandhill cranes lately,
Right. That's right.
So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. People, you know, I've gone over to Nebraska to see sandhill cranes by the thousands, and now people are starting to report them, you know, flying through central Iowa.
Now, is that something that we had a long time ago?
I believe so. I mean, we were a prairie state, and mm-hmm. and so we had so many species back then that we don't have now, but also those that we've brought back, like the peregrine falcon, mm-hmm. The river otter was not completely gone, but it was it had disappeared from much of Iowa, and before we brought that back, and ospreys.
Oh,
that's another species that was successfully brought back.
What about people's less favorite ones, like the predators? How are foxes doing? Is coyote the largest predator we have?
Right now, we do have, there are reports up in northeast Iowa of a wolf wandering in occasionally.
Oh.
Black bear wandering in occasionally. Of course, cougars come through.
But we used to have all of those
mm-hmm.
things, right?
It's
their natural territory.
Yep.
So...
And they would help us with this deer overpopulation.
Yeah, correct? I think part of it is we have forgotten how to live with larger predators because right now we're the largest predator.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you take us away from the equation, the coyote is probably one of the larger predators. So we've just forgotten how to live with these large predators. But if you ever go camping in Montana or Minnesota or anything like that and experience the howl of the wolves and finding cougar scat or whatever, that truly – people do live with these wild predators.
Do we have any cats here? Do we have bobcat?
We do have bobcat.
We do.
Yep, and that was another – animal that was pretty much extirpated from the state. But, yes, it's back now, and they actually have a trapping season on them. So that's been a successful return.
There are successes, and I guess it just goes to show that we are all in this together.
We are, indeed.
Let's celebrate the wild species around us. Thanks to our special guest, Marley Ayersman. Ah, yes. Thinking about the wild things that we live with. There are a lot of creatures out there, and we're all part of it, too.
And life is wild in Iowa, still, a little bit.
And actually, that's what makes us human, right?
Right.
Okay, that was Marlene Ayersman. She's the director of the Iowa Wildlife Center here in central Iowa. And for more information, you can go to iowawildlifecenter.org. They have a Facebook page. They have a website. They are dedicated to healing wild lives, healing wild lands, and healing the human spirit. And they have an office at 328 Main Street in Ames, right down the street here from the studio. And if you have information you'd like to share or more questions, here's a phone number, 515-233-1379. Yes, Iowa Wildlife Center. Well, we want to take a little bit of time here to mention that we just finished an official fundraising event here. Lots of good stuff.
At the radio station.
The radio station. And we'll remind you that, and you may have forgotten. You may have forgotten to send in your donation. And if you're listening, I would suggest that you kind of check with your brain and say, did I send in my donation? I should. Yes,
you
should.
Do I have a membership?
Do I have a membership? Yes. So here is some contact information. You can call 515-292-2878 and talk to somebody down here or go to khoifm.org. Find out a lot about our station there. And there is a magic donate button as part of that website. Donalana Kitchen has a web page there. You can go and find past archives, past shows. If you just can't get enough of us, we're
recipes,
there. And
even.
We got great recipes. Yeah. And if we try a recipe, if it doesn't turn out, we maybe wrote it wrong. So let us know. Let us know. We've got a lot of good stuff there. Very good. So now is the time to celebrate spring.
Yep. Tomorrow is May Day.
Oh, it is.
May Day, the first day of May.
People do maypoles occasionally. We don't do that sort of thing much anymore.
No, it's also called, it's Beltane, isn't it? Which is a day of bonfires and sensual pleasures and all kinds of ancient practices were traditionally happened on the first of May. And even at, this is something I don't think we're doing anymore. We've lost a tradition that children loved when I was a child. It was the May Day basket. I can remember with my sister, we would construct these little baskets out of colored construction paper and glue and staples, and there were different ways of folding it and different colors, and it all had a long handle, and the idea was to fill it with wildflowers or maybe some homemade cookies, and then you would hang it on your neighbor's door, ring the doorbell, and run away.
Kind of like reverse trick-or-treat.
Exactly.
And again, it kind of harks back to, the young spirit coming to visit you. I remember doing that
sort
of thing.
Did you do that? I mean, we had so much fun doing it. I don't think anybody even does that anymore.
And just to give away a bit of spring, mm-hmm. just for the downright joy of
right.
it.
Right. We would even just go around and pick all the wild violets. And, you know, I mean, this was not, I suspect that because it doesn't have a lot of commercial applications.
You didn't have to buy anything.
No, you didn't have to buy anything except your construction paper.
Right, staples and glue.
Right, it wasn't a kit. It wasn't a prepared Valentine. It wasn't anything. We just did it
from scratch.
Probably
by the time your neighbor found that basket, maybe the violets were a little wilty, but it was the thought that counts.
We lived in a small town in southern Illinois, and we had a lot of elderly neighbors, and we were some of the only children in the neighborhood, and so they all knew that it was the Baumgartner girls doing this, but it was a lot of fun.
Celebrate joy. Yes, yes. We have some upcoming things to look forward to.
On Saturday is the first farmers market downtown. Mm-hmm. And also, Cook's Emporium is having a new grand reopening for their newly remodeled store. And there will be lots of things going on Main Street on Saturday. I hope the weather's good. Have you checked the weather?
I'm a farmer. Of course, I checked the weather. It's supposed to be a beautiful Saturday.
Perfect. Oh, goody. Oh, goody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ames has got a great farmer's market and just starting. And I'm sure a lot of other little towns all around central Iowa, just check it out because I'm sure there are farmer's markets just kind of itching to start.
And there'll be lots of farmers selling seedlings like tomatoes. What are you going to sell seedlings at the market, Juana?
I'll have some there. And this is kind of a tradition here. It's you wouldn't think it's a farmers market thing, but the first farmers market is a celebration and a congregation of food trucks.
Local food. So actually, last year was a really big turnout. Oh. So if the weather's going to be good, it should be a very festive and delicious event.
So a lot of prepared foods, and people just like to come and celebrate spring, kind of like May Day baskets. Well, just come out and talk to your kids and your dogs and your
sandals and your sunglasses.
And we'll look at each other's white legs. It'll be fun. It'll be nice.
So that's Saturday. And what, 8:30? 8:30 to 12:30?
It starts
that's right.
8 o'clock. 8 o'clock. Come
8
on.
O'clock.
8
okay.
o'clock. Right on Main Street. And again, in your community, kind of ask around and find when the farmer's market's going to start. It's an important part of summer, and it's a great way to kick off spring.
There'll be rhubarb, maybe. What do you think?
Oh, I hope so, yes.
You think the rain will hurt the rhubarb?
No, rain never hurts the rhubarb.
Okay.
Rhubarb is one of those tough titans of the garden. Yes. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Today we talked about chives, watercress, and wild things, wild animals with Marlene Ehrsman from the Iowa Wildlife Center. We've had music by Reginald R. Robinson, original piano compositions, ragtime. Yes, ragtime. We are going out with a tune called the Ragtime Jamboree. Donalana Kitchen comes to you live at noon every Tuesday, repeated at 7 p.m. on this fine community radio station, KHOY 89.1 FM. Or listen anytime at KHOIFM.org. Support this station. We're all in this together. And like Donna says, go out and nibble on something.
That's right. Go pick your own.
Go pick your own. And find out some, if you're a little hesitant, there's books to refer to.
Just learn one plant this year.
Get familiar with it, see how it tastes, what it's going to do for you. It's all good. My name's Lana.
Well, it's not all good. You have to be careful.
That's true.
Be careful, right?
My name's Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
With excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.